Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. I am still Josh Beiser, and we have a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be interviewing some new developers here on the podcast. Unfortunately, James couldn't make it to this one, but we're going to have a great cast nonetheless. We're going to be talking about some of the work they've been doing on their first game and kickstarted project, Regalia of Men and Monarchs. So please welcome from the studio Pixelated Milk, Andrew and Thomas.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, it is great to have you guys on. How are you doing tonight?
Actually, it's pretty fine. You know, it's pretty warm over there in Poland, so we can't complain.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
We've been having some crazy weather over here between the rain and just like a very warm winter. So I'm not sure what's going to happen over the next month here. But it is great to have you guys on. I've been trying out your game Regalia over the last few weeks. This was just simply the preview build that was sent over. I guess this was for like press and streamers. So I'm definitely excited to see what the full game has to offer.
Oh, actually, we're glad you enjoyed it because, you know, every time a streamer touches our game, it's a bit of a, you know, heart-pounding experience because it's like we're always scared that it will be like, what? This game is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it to say.
Yeah, no problem. So since this is your guys' first time on our cast, I figure we'll start with one of my regular questions, and that is, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about yourselves and kind of like your background with Pixelated Milk.
All right, so who should start then?
Feel free.
Yeah, go on.
Either one.
All right, so I'm Andrew. I'm the writer of Regalia. I also do, you know, I also dabble a bit in the design, though less than Thomas, because he's our one of our main designers. I was one of the initial project makers of Regalia, because basically the project started out as a small hobby, as a passion project between me and my brother, who's the lead of the project. And then it grew into something more, into a much bigger, you know, much bigger project with more people engaged in it. And basically, Thomas is our real life friend who's working on Regalia with us too. So maybe it's his turn now.
What I do for the project is basically quite a lot of stuff, because it starts from animating the characters, then some design, and even programming. So basically I do whatever is actually needed at a given time in the project. As Andrew said, I'm one of a core group, so to speak, for Regalia. So generally, Pixelated Milk consists of real-life friends who met one another playing board games and then decided to, make a game.
It's a bit of a blur, you know, because it's hard to... You mentioned you should, you know, we should... we should tell you something about our background, but really it's hard to pinpoint, you know, that specific moment where it became a company, you know, a game project, because basically it was like, hey, want to join us? Want to make this game? Sure, why not? And then it happened somehow.
One of the great things about talking to developers on these casts is everyone has their own story for how they started making video games or how they got their group together. So it's always fascinating to hear things all around the world like that. Now, here's a question that I like to ask some of our international guests that we have on the cast. Now, as you said, that Pixelated Milk is based out of Poland. I was just wondering, for like my audience, which is going to be mainly like United States, like this side of the world, how is like the video game industry doing in Poland? Are there a lot of studios around?
I think one of the major blessings for Polish game development was The Witcher. You know, the Witcher, when the Witcher series started, you know, the first part and the sequel, then Witcher 3, it basically prompted, it was such a huge success that it prompted, you know, this massive boost of development in Poland. Suddenly, everyone wanted to be like CD Projekt Red. Mm-hmm. Everyone wanted to have their own Witcher. So, yeah, I think the indie scene or in general game development scene is a pretty booming business in Poland right now.
Yeah, right now it's estimated about 4,000 people working in the industry from what I've heard lately, and it's growing dynamically, which you can tell if you have a chance to visit some of Polish game expos, which you probably won't have a chance to do, but still.
Yeah, maybe someday, maybe if things start picking up with the Patreon campaign here, maybe we can have like international cast someday.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, yeah, it's great to hear, and as you guys said, like CD Projekt Red really like blew things up for the Polish game industry scene, and we've been seeing examples of this throughout the world with like one studio really making a name for itself in its native country and that kind of growing things around. And as we've seen like over the last few years, it's really amazing about how globalized, especially indie development, has become. Basically, as long as you are able to make games, you can make them in just about any part of the world now.
Yeah, and that's funny that you mentioned it, because that's the mind-blowing part. Because when you think about it, you have like you said, The Witcher is a Polish game, CD Projekt is a Polish company, and then you grew up with this, you know, sentiment that video games are, you know, a Western or an Eastern thing. It never happens in your country, you know, when you're Polish. It's something, you know, far away from you. And then suddenly all those big companies have their, you know, missteps, like BioWare had their missteps with Andromeda, and all those big RPGs suddenly have their issues. And this huge RPG game comes and the internet calls it, you know, the savior of RPGs. And it's basically your neighbor, because the guys at CD Projekt Red are like two streets away from our office.
Nice.
So it's crazy. Yeah, so it's crazy to think about it, that this is basically a game made by our neighbors, so wow.
Yeah, that's one of the exciting things about the game industry, and probably one of the riskier parts, that you never know what game is going to blow up like that. Because,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I've been speaking to developers, again, for, I think we're now going over 5 years this October, and again, you hear like it's from all walks of life. I've talked to developers who've had that big success. I've talked to other ones who have been struggling, and it is sometimes just a gamble, because you just never know. Like you were talking about this when we first started regarding people looking at Regalia, you never know how your game is going to be once you put in front of someone who's, you know, not part of that studio.
Yeah, that's true. It's basically a kind of all or nothing project for us, because if it's received well by the market, by players, we'll have a chance to continue our work and like dream on making games. And if it's the opposite, well, we'll have to think if we should stay in the industry and what we should do next. So it's like you said, it's quite a gamble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned people coming from various walks of life, because, yeah, I don't think, well, it's changing, sure, but I don't think there is something called, you know, a solid video game making degree in Poland,
yeah.
Because basically both me and Thomas, you know, we're lawyers by education. So we're not exactly, you know, people that should be making video games. So yeah.
And again, like, you never know. Like I said, I hear like all different backgrounds when I talk to people. I have a friend in the United States who I think he was a banker before he got into the game industry.
Yeah, exactly, and that's crazy,
yeah.
And awesome at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think that's. I think video games are an outlet for, you know, this specific creativity that doesn't really hang on your education.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's nice that you can come from those various walks of life and still make a great game.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I guess getting back to talking about Regalia, as we said before the cast, this is your guys' actual first game, like, together at Pixelated Milk, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Did you guys do like any like smaller projects before going to Regalia, or is this just like literally like your first project, your first game kind of thing?
No, it was an extremely spontaneous thing. Like no, because at you know, at the very beginning of things, it was I was still studying back then. And my brother was had a day job. I had a day job too. Everyone had their separate day jobs, and it was like this little thing that we did, you know, in the afternoons, in the evenings, on weekends, and it spontaneously became this larger thing. Hey, let's make a company. Hey, let's get more people. So yeah.
Yeah, the Kickstarter was actually a milestone, kind of milestone for
us. Yeah,
That was the moment where we decided that we should take it more seriously, if I can say that. That's when we like dropped our jobs and started a real company and started working on the game full time.
Cool. Yeah, because we gathered around and said, if we keep doing it like this, this game will never come out, right? So we just gambled it all. We quit our day jobs and launched our Kickstarter, which was successful, and proceeded to work full time on the game.
Yeah. And definitely congratulations on the successful Kickstarter, because you guys did that Kickstarter. I was looking at the page before we began. You put that up in 2016, correct?
2015. Let me double
check
that.
We've been making
the game
for 2 years.
Right.
June 2015.
Yeah. So this was way after kind of like the bubble burst for a lot of indie Kickstarters. Like, we saw a lot of games, it became a lot harder for developers to get their projects going. And for your first game and your first Kickstarter to succeed, definitely congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
So you put the Kickstarter up in 2015. When did you guys first start working on Regalia? Or when did you decide to take it from being a pet project to like a full-time kind of development?
A year before that, before the Kickstarter, or half a year before the Kickstarter, something like that.
All right.
Yeah, prior to the Kickstarter, it was mostly of preparation for the Kickstarter campaign. So we mostly worked on preparing a kind of base to show people to be able to visualize our idea better. So was mostly directed towards Kickstarter campaign, all our work.
Okay. And that is definitely an interesting statement there about spending time working on the Kickstarter, because one of the other parts of that challenge of going to crowdfunding is knowing how much to dedicate to it. And we've had many discussions with developers about that here on the podcast and when we do stuff live. I guess my next question for both of you is, so you put the Kickstarter up in 2015, you started working full-time or getting serious about it in 2014. So did you spend like the entire year, I guess, preparing for the Kickstarter, or how long did you guys spend, I guess, getting things together before launching it?
No, not exactly like you said, actually, because before Kickstarter, it was mainly like a hobby. We just worked in the evenings, during the weekends, thought about Kickstarter campaign, prepared materials for it, and we made it a full-time job kind of 2 months after the Kickstarter. So it was we actually started the company about September 2015. Yeah, I think it was September.
Okay. So how long did you guys actually spend like preparing for the Kickstarter, getting everything together on that front?
Oh my God. Do you mean like in terms of assets or, you know,
like assets, planning the project out, knowing what rewards to do, what stretch goals, stuff like that?
Oh, that was mostly researched, you know, by my brother, by our project lead, who's not here at the moment, sadly. But
I'd say it was a few months, between three and six months, maximum.
I think.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Yeah,
maybe
because
I'm confusing something.
Most of our assets, of the assets used on Kickstarter, came before that. You know, before the actual Kickstarter campaign. Those were the assets we had, you know, prepared in the evenings and all that stuff. When it was still a hobby, but. But all the we had to do research, get all the know-how basically from scratch, because there are some when you're a Polish game company, there are some obstacles you have to face when you're making when you're putting a game on Kickstarter, and we had to do, you know, a very thorough look into that.
Yeah, you actually cannot actually start your own project as a Polish company, so you need someone from the US to help you start a project. So that's quite kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, you need to have, you know, you need to have legal representation in the States to do that.
Interesting. I haven't heard too much about that, but again, I've been mainly speaking to developers in the United States. But yeah, that is interesting about needing. So you need like a U.S. based location for the Kickstarter.
I think you need to have a U.S. based location and a U.S. based, you know, I think legal representative. Am I right? I think so. And there's, you know, there are businesses and, you know, attorney offices that basically specialize in just that thing.
Supplying Kickstarter for third world countries.
Exactly. Third world countries like us. Basically, there's this whole sub branch, lawyers and offices who are just working to put companies like us on Kickstarter. So that's where we went.
Okay, interesting. So, with the Kickstarter, I guess I have a few questions for both of you. These are ones that I like to ask all of our developers who come on, who have either succeeded or have done a Kickstarter campaign. The first one is, as a new developer, as someone like just getting in and going straight to Kickstarter, what did you guys think of, I guess, using this as a crowdfunding option for your game?
What did we think?
Yeah, like, did you enjoy the experience? Was it?
Oh no, it was horrifying. No, I'm serious. Basically, that was one of the worst months in my life. It was like this, either, you know, constant refreshing or checking. Yes. It was like, oh my god, why isn't the money growing? And there was this because I think there are like we did some research into, you know, backer theory and when usually does the money pull in. And usually you have those 2 points, right? Mm-hmm. Right in the beginning and at the end of the campaign, where when the notifications come, when you are reminded on email that this project is still running, and you have those two hotspots when people give the most of their money. Mm-hmm. So when we hit that boring part in the middle of the campaign and the money wasn't, you know, growing, we had that thought that maybe it will start growing at the end of the campaign, but it was still like, oh my god, nobody's giving money, it will fail, we're doomed. But somehow we succeeded.
I wouldn't describe it this better.
it was horrifying, it was harrowing, but ultimately I would like to say that it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely
Yes. And like you said, like, it can be very nerve-wracking. It's why when I've spoken to developers like that, like, that's why you spend a few months planning it out, just so you got all your bases covered. And like like you said, when it comes to Kickstarter, usually we see like the biggest pushes, like I forget the exact numbers, but isn't like the first like 48 or 72 hours and then like the last 72 hours?
Yeah, exactly. You have those sweet spots. The first 2-3 days and the last couple of days. The middle part of the Kickstarter is the boring part. People don't give their money usually during that part, or they're waiting, you know, they're hedging their bets and seeing how's the funding, because most people don't want to fund you when the money isn't growing. So that's correct. Those two spots are the most important.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess here's a question. This may still be way too soon to answer, but it's another one of those ones I like to ask new developers or those who have Kickstarter on. So get ready for this one.
Okay. My body is ready.
Okay. I guess, now, obviously, as we're doing this, we are recording this in early April right now. But yeah. The game isn't out yet. So my question for both of you is, after the whole Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign and all that, do you guys think as a company that you will return to Kickstarter in the future for whatever your next game may be?
Well,
that's a tough question. You were right.
Mm-hmm. It
all depends, I guess, on the situation. If we let's say secure the budget for the next game, and we don't have to look for help somewhere else, like Kickstarter, probably we'd consider it. But this wouldn't be a kind of must-have thing to do. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen lately, Kickstarter is getting harder and harder to get through on it. So board games are more popular right now than video games. I've seen those statistics somewhere. I can't recall where now, but I've seen that last year there were less projects than for example at 2015. So it's getting harder and harder to get successful with a computer game, actually, from what I've seen.
Yeah. That's a very sad and true statement, because I think Kickstarter as a crowdfunding medium for games, for video games at least, is dying, because and it will be way with each month, with each year, it will be much harder to crowdfund anything, because in the beginning you had those projects like Double Fine's adventure game, you had Pillars of Eternity, and it was this cool, hip new way to fund your games. People were like, "All right, we'll have a new Baldur's Gate game, we'll have a new LucasArts style point and click game." Mm-hmm. And then one project failed, the other project failed. There was this slew of basically scams and of failed projects, and I think fate in crowdfunded games is an all-time low currently. And the golden era when where you could put a completely unknown game like Banner Saga, for example,
Potato Salad.
Yeah, or crowdfund a potato salad and get millions. I think that those days are over, and they will never come back. So
there goes my big plan for Kickstarter. Then no more potato salad.
Oh,
that's a shame.
Sorry to disappoint you.
That's all right. I guess let's move on and talk a little bit more about Regalia, and I'm sure that will take us to the end for today's cast. So. For those of you listening to the cast right now, a few months ago I put up my preview impressions of Regalia Men Monarchs on the YouTube channel. If I can find that link, I will include it in the podcast notes below. But for the folks listening to this who didn't watch it or don't know what Regalia is, could you talk a little bit about what the game is about?
Regalia is a game about a guy who finds himself inheriting a kingdom. So basically, it's like Aragorn in Return of the King, just way, way worse, because instead of of a shiny kingdom, it's basically, I would like to say, it's a silly deconstruction of the concept, because instead of inheriting a glorious kingdom, and instead of that classic, the rightful king returns scenario, you inherit a huge mess. And there's a demonic debt collector who's breathing down your neck and trying to get the money that your ancestors owe him, and the debt is huge. Your character is basically a schmuck. He never wanted any of this. Everyone around him is more competent than him. So it's not a game about saving the world. It's a game about trying to escape from this mess and stay alive despite the massive debts.
Yeah, as Andrew said, the story is meant to be a lighthearted, kind of humorous well, even full of pop culture references. So it goes like this. And apart from the story, of course, it's a tactical RPG. So you get turn-based battles that happen on a square-based grid. You get characters which you can befriend, recruit, and take them into combat. You have a city to rebuild as the story dictates. And we actually have a system for rebuilding the city, so you get the whole city management system. Mm-hmm. It's not just a story thing that you have to rebuild the city. You actually have to do it in game. Mm-hmm. So that would be the most general description of the game, I guess.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to comment on that really struck a chord with me about Regalia was the combination of game systems that you guys came up with. As you said, it's not just a tactical RPG. You have the city management systems, and then you have the dungeon crawling. And what I was just saying before the cast, how the goals of the game are set up, kind of like a 4X strategy game, or like a grand strategy game almost, that you have these different goals to go after. So for the folks listening, could you talk a little bit about that kind of system, the part about how you basically get to decide how you win a game of Regalia?
Because in the beginning we tried, I think, just like with combat, we went like through two or three different iterations of those objective systems. Mm-hmm. But we realized that when you have a game, because we draw inspirations from the Persona series, mm-hmm. which are the newer, you know, incarnations, especially like Persona 3, 4, and now 5, which mm-hmm. is a great game, by the way. And you have those games are very tight on the schedule. There's always this calendar. There's always a deadline that keeps pushing you forward. But other than that, you don't really have any other objectives. So we wanted to have that same calendar system in our game. But at the same time, there's this concept of the debt, right? Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to make it about just collecting money or, you know, fulfilling set objectives, because that would be boring. Mm-hmm. When you open up a whole calendar for your players and you tell them you have 30 days, you can do whatever you want in that in that time span, but at the same time you're saying you have to do this and mm-hmm. this and this. You're not really giving them freedom, because they will still want or try to do those things to fulfill the objective. So we decided maybe it would be better, because there are different types of players. Some players want to read the dialogue, do the social links, because that's the personal element. Some people want to are like hardcore battle enthusiasts and just want to do the dungeon crawling. Mm. Some people want to, do the fishing stuff, which also takes time. And we didn't want to limit anyone in any way. So we decided that perhaps making broader objectives that get progressively harder, because initially you have to befriend one guy, then it's 5 or 10 or whatever. We decided that maybe it would be approach, because you still have goals that you have to reach, but at the same time you choose which goals that will be.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, Andrew, that a lot of Regalia is built on other RPGs. You mentioned the Persona series,
right?
I guess besides the campaign or your goals, how did you guys settle on the tactile combat?
In the beginning, it was because me and my brother, the two founders of Regalia, we grew up playing Final Fantasy Tactics, you know, the first one with terrible translation on the first PlayStation. And the very first thought was, we want to make a Final Fantasy Tactics game on PC. And the first draft, you know, the first combat demo we prepared in our office was very similar to Final Fantasy Tactics. The windows were very similar, the interface, even, you know, the text in the commands. But then as we kept adding new systems, because we had like two or three approaches to the classes, you know, to the skills, to character archetypes, and we kept changing it throughout the project. We kept adding more systems, so eventually that Final Fantasy Tactics inspiration vanished somewhere during that process, I think.
Yeah, you can still feel it, but it's not a complete ripoff, I'd say.
Yeah, because Final Fantasy Tactics had jobs, and very quickly in the development process, we realized that with our limited manpower, budget, and experience, we wouldn't be able to make a robust class system like Final Fantasy Tactics had. So we settled on archetypes, and we kept changing those archetypes. Eventually, we scrapped the archetypes and gave the characters perks that you could equip. Mm-hmm. So it was a slow evolution from a Final Fantasy Tactics clone into our very own mix of elements. Thomas, basically, because he's one of our main combat designers, he's a huge fan of Western RPGs. So he was, the tempering element. My brother is a huge Dark Souls fan. So we wanted to throw, the hardcore, often incomprehensible Japanese elements into the game. And it was, no, I don't like that. And I think we ended up with a pretty neat balance of Western and Eastern things.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that in of itself, that could easily be like a 2-hour conversation if we talk about JRPG versus Western RPG design. But
right.
Like you said, like the two different audiences or two different designs have their own kind of like philosophical or design quirks to them. And I guess here's an interesting question for both of you. When it comes to, I guess, trying to combine the JRPG and the Western RPG design, what kind of, I guess, philosophies, or what did you kind of like pick and choose from both sides of the table, I guess, in a matter of speaking, when you were putting it together for Regalia?
I think we didn't want to go, because in general, I would say that the Japanese equivalents tend to be much harder, mm-hmm. or at least less approachable. So that was something we decided very early on, that we wanted the game to be challenging but fair. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to be, a hardcore slog, painful slog that would want you to claw your eyes out like Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. So that was the first Western element that popped up. We want the game to be approachable and hard, but not too hard. I think you asked about the Japanese influences, the Eastern influences. I think the largest part of Japanese influences the largest concentration of them are still in the story, because we wanted to make the story, maybe not in the combat itself, but we wanted the story to feel very much like, an episode of an anime or mm-hmm. a JRPG game. So there are certain tropes that we play with that are, characteristic, very, very characteristic to JRPGs. And like in JRPGs, we have a pretty linear story. We have a set protagonist that's an idiot. That's also a JRPG cliche of a sort. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to play it all straight. We wanted to comment upon it and expand them in Western ways, so to speak.
When it comes to combat, you would be surprised where I guess you would be surprised where some of our inspirations come from, because as Andrew said, we got rid of job or class system. Yeah. All of our characters are unique. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the same skill twice in game, and when we decided to make them like kind of unique characters, then we had to invent skill sets, unique skill sets for them, and we were like, hey, let's make it like in MOBA games, like for example League of Legends. So you get 5 skills for each characters like in those games. So that's probably surprising, but that was the inspiration for it.
And one of the Japanese things, because Eastern Japanese games are more about the style, a specific style, or Eastern games more about the specific style, and the Western games are more about, customization. Usually mm-hmm. in games like Mass Effect or Skyrim, it's all about, the customization of your experience. And we wanted to have a very specific set of characters with very distinct personalities and a very specific hero. So I think that's also a big Eastern influence.
Okay. And another part that I want to touch on for the folks listening is the new game plus, or the fact that due to the design of Regalia, that you can't see 100% of the game in a single playthrough. And could you guys touch on that for the people listening?
Well, right now we have this idea to make a kind of endless mode. Like, for example, Witcher 3 had, so that's another inspiration from Western game design, let's say. Basically, when you finish the story, when you defeat the final encounter, watch the final cutscene, see the credits, whatever, you'll be left in your now rebuilt castle, and the game will allow you to continue playing. So you'll be able to explore the rest of the world, rest of dungeons which you didn't have a chance to visit before. That's our approach on this subject. You'll just able to...
But you still won't be able to see everything, because we have this slight diplomacy element where it's very basic, and we had to to limit our ambitions a bit during development. You have this basic diplomacy element where you can ally with 2 out of 4 factions, and they grant you specific perks, specific companions, which means that you won't be able to see and participate in social links, in relationships, in cutscenes, and character banters with those characters during one playthrough, because 2 characters will always be missing from your party. So you will have to play the game again if you want to see them. We're not sure whether we will make a full-blooded New Game Plus experience, but there is some replayability built into the system.
Okay. And another thing that I want to touch on, I know we're starting to get to the end of the cast, but one thing that I want to ask you guys about is the art style for Regalia. It has a really good, I guess it's almost like a cel shade, or actually it's probably more like a hand-drawn look to it. I guess, how did you guys decide on what kind of aesthetics you wanted for the game?
That was also, one of those things that changed over time, because I'm not sure if it's present in the initial Kickstarter pitch. I don't remember, but there was a period of time where we wanted to do it completely in sprites, but it was too, and we had, a sprite sheet drawn for our main protagonist and Griffith, his bodyguard, but we decided it would be, too time and resource consuming, so we scrapped that. So, but at the same time, we wanted to keep that fairy tale feeling and that Japanese feeling, and that's hard to do without, proper 2D artwork evoking that Japanese style. So we wanted, so it was a bit of a compromise. The models are for our convenience mostly, because they we wanted to both apply the cel-shaded feeling and make it easier for us to animate, to make the whole system work better. But the 2D art is to keep the game within the genre.
Yeah, so, having 3D characters is kind of budget decision, actually.
It's a compromise.
All right. Yeah, but I will say it definitely looks good. It has that pop to it when you're playing the game, in terms of how the character, kind of how everything looks. And as you said, doing really high quality pixel art, that is a huge challenge in and of itself.
You're the first person to say that. When you go, for example, to because we launched a good old games page yesterday, I think, and there are people who are writing things like, "Oh my god, it looks like a Flash game." So yeah,
just one guy. Come on, it wasn't that bad.
But every comment like that makes you die a little bit inside. I continue. Sorry about that.
Oh my goodness. We started talking about aesthetics and all that. Again, one of the things about these casts is any topic can set us off for an hour, 2-hour discussion. It's nothing here. But Yeah, like I've spoken to developers who have done pixel art, and there is a very big difference between low quality pixel art and then high quality, you know, the stuff that just really pops. And, you know, there is a huge variance in terms of the different kinds of pixel art you can even do in a game these days.
That's true.
But I think with that, again, I know you guys have to get going in a few minutes. And for those of you listening to this cast, I've done like 3 or 4 podcasts this week, so my voice is starting to die on me. So
you're doing fine.
We will probably wrap things up. But like I said, it was great having you guys on. And hopefully after the game is released, we can certainly have you guys back on and talk a little bit more about kind of your experience with wrapping the game up and seeing it, you know, out in the world for the first time.
Oh, sure. We would love to talk about that. Assuming, you know, we don't tank with the entire project.
I hope
not. Yeah, if it doesn't happen, we'll be happy to share our experience with you.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So to wrap things up for today's cast, I guess I just have a few basic questions about Regalia for people listening who are interested in it. So the first one is, what is your release date? What is the planned release date for Regalia?
The initial release date was April 27, but mm-hmm. we after some deliberation with our publisher, because we managed to secure a publisher, we decided to push it a bit back. You know, like you said, this is our first major game, and we wanted to be fair to our backers and to everyone who's interested in Regalia, and we wanted to, because the game is basically complete, mm-hmm. aside from very small things, but mm-hmm. we wanted to make it, you know, as polished as possible. Mm-hmm. And iron out the nasty bugs that are still left. So right now it's April 18, right?
May. It's May.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, well, I misspoke. May 18th. Mm-hmm. And that I can assure it won't change.
Yeah. And we also had that closed beta for our backers recently. Right. And we received some great feedback from our backers. So thank you guys from this spot. And we really want to implement as much as we can of this feedback into the final game. So that's why we had to push it back a little.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and I think that was a good move because again, as we've seen, once your game is out, it's out. So it's important to get it as polished and as bug-free as you can before you put it up as 1.0, especially, again, in today's market with a lot of people just, you know, picking apart games, you know, the second they get released.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's true. You can only release your game once.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then another question for you guys. For the folks listening, what platforms will it be available on?
Right now, because one of our Kickstarter stretch goals included a console version of the game, right mm-hmm. now we're working on a PC version of the game, and it will launch on Steam. And after that, we will be working on the console port, PS4.
Okay. And is it, besides Steam, will people be able to buy like on like Humble Bundle, GOG, stuff like that?
Oh, it's on GOG right now, actually. You can pre-order it. About Humble Bundle, we don't know. We'll see about it in the future.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing we have to discuss with our publisher, so yeah. We cannot say for sure right now.
Yeah, it's kind of out of our hands right
now. All right. Are you guys going to handle the console port yourselves, or will you contact like a third party to handle the PS4 port?
That's hard to answer right now. It's still an open, completely open subject.
All right. Yeah, no problem. I think with that we can begin to wrap things up. Like I always say, like topics such as JRPG versus Western RPG and all that, we can easily dedicate a few hours to. But I know you guys have to get going. For those of you listening, I think we're on a 6-hour time difference, right?
Yeah, it's 9 p.m. here.
Yeah. So I know you guys have to get going. And like I said, I need to go rest my voice for the rest of the day. So we're going to end things here. Before we go, then, I guess just 2 final wrap-up questions. The first one is there anything regarding Regalia in terms of its design, production, anything like that, that I didn't ask you that you guys like to bring up now?
Do you have any ideas, Thomas?
Thinking about it.
I know. Actually, it's hard to, when you're, you know, when you're so wrapped up in the entire project, it's hard to to pinpoint anything from the inside, you know?
Yeah. All right.
I don't know.
I know that sometimes, especially with these casts, we can cover so many topics in a period of time. Right. It can be hard to think about what else we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
All right. That
yeah,
is...
probably some ideas would come up like 5 minutes after the cast, but that will be too late. I'm sure it will be like this.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've had times where I forget a question, then like a day later, it pops into my head, and then it's just way too late at that point to do it.
Oh yeah, that's like you have that one perfect response, and it always comes too late. It's like that.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess with that said, my last question for you guys is: for the fans listening, do you have any final thoughts or anything you would like to say to them before we say goodnight?
If we can make games, you can do it too.
Right.
And making games is painful, and we definitely didn't anticipate so much trouble on the way, because it started out, you know, as a passion project, as a dream, and it ended up being a business venture. And it's a very rough, very time-consuming trip, but it's also a wonderful trip, and it's worth it. If you want to make a game, don't be shy to try. If a small studio like us can make a game and succeed at Kickstarter, you can do it too. Don't stop dreaming.
All right. Anything to add, Thomas?
I like to express my thanks for our backers and everyone that helped us get through to this point, because it feels really unusual that we are just about to release the game. We've been developing for 2 years, so it feels amazing, and let's hope we'll see you in another project of ours.
Cool. All right. I think with that, we're going to end things here. Once again, Thomas, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And like I said, I wish you guys the best of luck with wrapping up Regalia. And if things go well, hopefully we can have another chat after the game is out.
That would be amazing. Thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
Not a problem. So for those of you listening, we're going to end things here. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support or check out Game Wisdom, we have several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. We're always looking for new people to talk to, so definitely get in touch. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at GW Bicer for updates and thoughts from me throughout the day. You can find us on Twitch under GW Bicer for mostly daily streams and sometimes live developer interviews. And be sure to check out the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, now over 1,500 subscribers strong at this moment, for daily videos on games, vlogs on design in the industry, and a lot more. And be sure to check out our Patreon campaign. You can find us on there under Game Wisdom or GW Bicer to help support the site, allow us to grow, and get some nifty rewards along the way. If we hit goals, it will mean more content for everyone to enjoy. So with all that said, we are going to end things here. So Thomas, Andrew, I hope you guys have a great night. And like I said, definitely good luck on that last push for Regalia.
Thanks again. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Not a problem. All right. Yep. Have a great night. And you folks as well. Be sure to come back next week for another great cast. And I will talk to you then. Have a great night.